This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. I'm running sound on church. I'm running sound at church on Sunday. I couldn't figure out for a minute what I had said wrong. I'm running sound at church on Sunday, both this week and next. And I think both this week and next, I'm going to have rehearsals on Thursday night. So, I'm actually just in the parking lot of Walmart getting a few things to have for supper. And I'm going to drive around a little bit, get this recorded, and then go to church and have a little supper, and then run sound at church for rehearsal, and then head back home. All is well. All is well. Things are puttering along. I think I crossed chapter 10? Am I on chapter 10? Chapter 11? Something? I have two more weeks before I get back to editing up book 9. But we seem to be on schedule, so all is well there. Starting to get some of the input coming back in for book 9, so that's good. Got a little writer, little reminder, write a little reminder this week end. To all the beta readers, tell them the deadline's coming up. So that's good. All is well there. Everything's fine at work. We're puttering along. All is well with the family. I had an experience today at work. It's just this whispers thing, this Jesus whispers thing is just so interesting. It's just so very interesting. So just a bit of background. I have a couple of members who are helping me on this team of working at my major client, and one of them had another proposal came up that had been approved, that technically wasn't under my current initiative. So, you know, that's fine. It was for the same division that I'm currently working in. But that's fine. They needed something done. They put in a proposal. The big bosses had said, yep, go ahead, do it. Do it. You know, get it done. Do it. It actually was in two phases. And the first phase seemed to go pretty well. Got done, got developed, got deployed. Everything was fine. No problems. The gentleman that I was working with had started into the second phase. Everything seemed to be okay. And he had deployed it last Friday. So almost a week ago now he had deployed it. And almost immediately they started getting some reports of people getting stuck on certain screens and not being able, because it's a big application. They're making application for service. Of people getting stuck on screens and not being able to move forward unless they refreshed their page. So that was a little weird, and so they started looking, and since it wasn't in my bailiwick, I just, you know, I had plenty to do, so I didn't necessarily volunteer myself. And it was really strange, because it worked just fine on the dev site, but not the production site. They were running slightly different versions of Windows Server and using exactly the same browser. The developer and his box at his office could never make it do it, but the primary stakeholder, the client, she could make it do it on her machine consistently. And so this, you know, they were trying to figure out what was going on. And by the time I got back in on Monday, you know, I had chatted with the developer a little bit about it. And, you know, he was saying, well, it works on dev. And, you know, I can't even get it to do it on prod. It works fine on prod for me, but it's not for her. And, oh, I think I saw him. I did. I saw him on Friday. Oh, Friday was Crazy Paisley Day. I forgot about that. That was fun. That was Crazy Paisley Day was fun. So got a lot of good comments, made a lot of smiles. It was fun. It was fun. Crazy Paisley Day was fun. Went and saw some friends, yada, yada, yada. So I happened to see him. I was getting ready to leave because I'd snuck into my major clients in a few strategic places where I wouldn't necessarily be seen a lot. Snuck in, saw a couple of people, and blah, blah, blah. But I had seen him going to the credit union, and so I had stopped and to chat with him and see how, and he was describing the problem, and I last Friday, and I said, you know, I don't know any other way but just to go over there to her office and watch her as she's doing it, so you can see what's going on, because what she is describing may not be what you're hearing, so you've got to get over there. So I think he did that on Monday. He went over and took a look, and you know, it was a weird problem because it wouldn't reproduce on his computers, was reproducing on her computers, wouldn't reproduce on the project manager's computers, would reproduce on so-and-so's computer. I mean, it was all over the map. And it was random, wouldn't always happen the same. And so, you know, they're going back and forth and back and forth, and they're trying to figure out what's going on, and Monday turns into Tuesday, and I think it was Tuesday that I went over to the same area because I was working with another co-worker over there on another project I was working on, and I thought, well, while I'm here, I should just poke my head in the door and see how everything was going. They were in there and they were trying to figure it out, and I was looking at it, and it's just weird. But it's not my project. It's just weird. It's weird. It just isn't working, you know, and it should. It's, I don't know. So I pulled out my laptop, and sure enough, it was doing the same thing on my laptop, and we went, oh, hey, you know, it's reproducible. And I said, okay, well, look, you know, address the developer. I said, look, you can borrow my laptop. You can reproduce it on my laptop. So why don't you take this back to your desk and then you can work with it on my laptop and you can go from there. So he did and did a lot of research, downloaded some logs, looked on Google, went through this. It's Tuesday. You know, Wednesday I talked to him, still having the problem, can't figure out, you know, and we had talked about, okay, when do we do the drop dead, just revert so we can, you know, get at least back to where people can use this thing, because this particular application, there's like 850 people coming through a year to sign up on this application, and they can't do it by paper anymore because it would just take too long. They rely on the tech, so having the tech crippled is not good, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we talked about, okay, well, what's drop dead for you? When do you think that we just need to do revert? And they had, I guess, decided on Thursday they were going to go ahead and revert, or Friday they were going to go ahead and revert, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm working on my other stuff, and today comes around, and still no solution, looking, no solution. And I had gotten my stuff kind of straightened around to the point where I had a little extra free time, and I get this little, you know, you should really take a look at that, kind of in the back of my head. Because we knew what the problem was as described by the error message, and that was that a floating point number was getting submitted to a resize routine that was expecting an integer. So the newer web browsers, when they're calculating screen sizes and what adjustments have to be made, how far you are from the top, I guess in the olden days, they only used integers to describe that. Well, the newer browsers now use floating points, so they can have a gajillion decimal points behind the period. So you could see when it would throw the errors, you could see that it was passing in this giant number, for apparently a top position or something. And so So finally this afternoon I had a bit of time and I was, you know, gonna be gone for 3 days, and I just had these whispers like, oh, you should just look at this, you should just look at it, you should look at it, you should look at it. So I was like, oh, okay, fine. Because it's not technically within my bailiwick, but it's the same division that I work for. So it's like, yeah, let's just try it. So we knew it was reproducible on my laptop, so I get on my laptop and I turn on the JavaScript debugger and, you know, going through it one line at a time with the developer, and we're looking at, okay, it is in the resizing, it's doing this, it's doing that, you know. And it's way down deep. It's way, way down deep in the JavaScript that we don't even control, and my flesh is going, ah, there's no solution for this. There's no solution for this. You're crazy. There's no solution for this. You can't get down there and change that stuff. There's no solution for this. Just give up. Give up. It's just like, man, come on. You know, is there anything we can do? And I'm looking. And then suddenly, I realize, well, or Jesus whispers to me, you know, if you scroll the screen all the way up to the top of the page and try it, it doesn't error off. But if you're scrolled down to the middle of the page, it does. And my first reaction is, what? And I realize in that moment that does make some sense. Because if the coordinates of the page that you're on are 0, 0 for the top, you do the multiplication, you're always going to come out with an integer number. But if you're scrolled down on the page somewhere and you happen to be working with a browser / client side server / server that happens to be sensitive to this floating point stuff, that anywhere you're scrolled on the page, potentially you're going to get a floating point number out of that. You know, so I'm thinking, well, and so sure enough, I start trying this. You know, I scroll all the way to the top, refresh the page, comes back every time beautifully. Just run the scroll bar down a little bit, refresh the page every time it throws this error. And so I looked at the developer and I said, well, you know, if you scroll all the way to the top of the page, it doesn't throw this error anymore. And he said, what? He said, I showed him. I said, if you scroll to the top of the page, he said, well, you know, look at that. I said, I don't know what that means, man. I have no idea what that means. And then this idea, again, pops into my head, probably Jesus. I suppose what we could do is we could just put in some JavaScript that every time it goes to draw the page, we could just force it back up to the top of the page. This is called a hack. This is a kludge. This is not a good solution. You know, the best solution probably would have been to update the controls that were on the page, but, you know, to the latest version, which they don't have license, which would have been hundreds of dollars, blah, blah, blah. You know, I said, but we could stick in this piece of JavaScript code and, you know, that might work. So we get over there and we stick this piece of JavaScript in there. We have to stick it into two different places. And all it does is when it's getting ready to load the next form, it just pops back up to the top of the page. Or when you refresh the page, it pops to the top of the page. That's all it does. And he had a bunch of steps he had to go through to get it over to production. I said, okay, well, let's just try this. So, and the whole time I'm thinking, come on, this can't be it. It's just, this cannot be it. I mean, it's not a solution. Definitely, it's not a solution. But it potentially was something that could work. So he comes back over about 15, 20 minutes later, and he says, well, that seems to work. It's like, what? Okay. You know, and so, you know, I go over and we test it. Sure enough, this seems to work. And he was saying, well, I kind of like this better anyways, because it's, you know, that you see exactly where the form is popping up, and the form always pops up in the right place. And so he said, you know, I kind of like it the way it is. And I said, well, I don't know that it can cause any problems. So, you know, we spent probably, I think I billed an hour and a half by the time it was all said and done, by the time we kind of dinked around and looked at the JavaScript and, you know, but I mean, this has been something that's been going on since Friday. They've been trying to come up with a solution, and I'm just going do-de-do-de-do-de-do-de-do, wandering into this, you know, and Jesus is whispering. And it's just astonishing. Because I was thinking, well, maybe we'd get down to the JavaScript and do some alterations and maybe, you know, figure out if we can cast this variable into an integer before it hits the thing. But there was no way any of that would have worked. And I was close to giving up and saying, yeah, buddy, I don't know. You may just have to update the controls and be done with it. And then just out of the blue, a solution shows up. And I no more expected to find that solution than anything. But there's just a whisper. And then you kind of follow that. And sometimes it goes off in a direction you're just not even expecting. And then all of a sudden it works out. It's an amazing thing. It's just an amazing thing. So that's not really the topic for today, though. And I've got to do this fairly quickly. Because I got to get me some supper before I run sound. But this, I came across this, and this is a fascinating story. And especially it's a fascinating story for me on the podcast before the midterm elections, 2018 midterm elections. I've been saying for some time that I really expect there to be a high voter turnout. And I think at this point, I really expect for there to be the highest voter turnout for midterm elections than there has ever been. Because obviously passions are running high at this point. And I have talked a couple of times, you know, about the Ford Kavanaugh thing. And I did talk a little bit about Jordan Peterson, and one of the things that he talks about is on both the left and the right side, there are extremists. And so how do you, if you identify with the right, or how do you, if you identify with the left, how do you draw the line and say, okay, that's too far? We're not going with you there. And how we do it on the right, we seem, the community of people who are on the right seem to do it, is they say, you know, when you get into true racism, not just being called names, but true racism, white supremacists, fascism, advocating violence, that kind of stuff, it's too far, too far. But where is that line on the left then? At what point does empathy become destructive? You know, at what point does equity become destructive? There's a really interesting court case that's moving through now, that's heading up to the Supreme Court over affirmative action brought by Asian Americans who believe they've been discriminated against and denied entry to Harvard because they were Asian. So, you know, at what point does the affirmative action become destructive? How much are we willing to let it go? So this particular story was actually brought to my attention on a YouTuber's channel. Her name is Bettina Arndt, and she is a marriage and dating and advisor, counselor in Australia, who's also very involved in speaking out against the radical feminist movement and its characterization of men. She's a big defender of men. And, you know, and so she has some interesting things. She posted she posted this particular thing, and she was talking about the fact that the BBC has done some stories recently about false rape allegations that had collapsed when it was discovered that the police were withholding critical social media evidence that could have proven innocent the accused men, that the police knowingly withheld this evidence, even though it could show the innocence of the men who had been accused of this rape. And, you know, it's interesting. She went ahead then and cut to a video. And before this video, she noticed that the Metropolitan Police now, because there was such a backlash and an outcry when these cases started coming out where supposedly policemen withheld evidence they knew proved innocence simply because they were trying to side with the accuser who was making claims of sexual molestation and rape from these accused men, that the Metropolitan Police had announced that they were ditching the practice of believing all victims. And the BBC actually reported that over the last 2 years that there had been a 70% increase in the number of prosecutions in England and Wales that had collapsed because of a failure by police or prosecutors to disclose evidence. Which, that's a really interesting thing. So she played then a talk by a man named Patrick Graham. He was a retired social worker who, along with four other elderly men, was falsely accused of being part of a pedophile ring. It's really interesting. You know, he started out his story by talking about the fact that he knew something was up when he was being questioned, and he made a joke about needing a lawyer for his human rights, and he said one policeman looked at the other and kind of gave him this kind of little snide look. And he said, what that look communicated to me is this police officer didn't believe I had any rights. And as it gets farther along, you begin to wonder what's just going on. Anyways, his saga started when he had three plainclothes policemen come very early in the morning, knock on his door, and say that he was under arrest for allegations of sexual assault between 1990 and 1996. That's the only way they would narrow it down, which, as he said, you know, it's not exactly easy to provide an alibi across 6 years. But he said they came in, they confiscated all of his computer equipment. His wife's iPads, their work computers, confiscated everything. And he said that was the start of the longest, most perverse journey he'd ever been on in his life. And it was 78 weeks of his life. So this went on for 78, it was almost a year and a half. Almost a year and a half. This went on. So what had happened was a woman had described weekly child rape parties that were set up by her own father. And these descriptions came out in interviews that were led by police officers that allowed her to go very slowly with frequent breaks and go into great detail over 18 hours spread over 5 days. Now, what's interesting is all of this testimony apparently happened in 2013. But it was some 3 years before the police felt like the woman was in good enough shape that they could actually prosecute. So it was 3 years after she had given all of this testimony that the police finally descended. And he said, you know, for those 3 years, nobody was paying any attention to us at all. We were supposedly these terrible criminals that were doing all these pedophilic acts on children, and no one even bothered to say anything to us. He said he found that interesting. He's got a lot of facts and figures. It's very interesting. If you want to watch the whole thing, the name of the YouTube video is Bettina Arndt Introduces Patrick Graham, Feminine Justice Survivor. But he begins to detail some of what was going on in all of this. One thing is that the police, he was saying up to about the year 2000, the police were not handling rape, in his opinion, handling rape cases well, that they were accusing the victim, that they were doing all the things that you shouldn't do. And he said after 2000, the pendulum really swung the other way, and they just decided they were going to believe everybody and they were going to prosecute everything. So, you know, with that in mind, this woman makes these accusations and no one bothers to look at her background. So no one bothers to find out that she had actually done this before. I think it was her. I don't think it's this. Yeah, I think I'm reading this correctly, that the same woman at age 15 made a false accusation of rape and then admitted it and then withdrew it. And she was making other alleged and sexual assault accusations. I mean, I'm really glad that how this was done was not was not how it was done with me, because I was at Walmart one day and I knew the cashier. And there was a woman in front of me that was just muttering to herself. And I was just standing there not saying anything, you know. And she looked back and she saw me and I kind of smiled and nodded. And then she started in on me. You know, oh, well, you know, this, I don't know what this problem's got. You know, he's like a sexual predator or something. You know, he's like, he's always talking to me about sex and stuff. And, you know, he's like a predator. He's like a rapist. And he's, I mean, she's going off on all this kind of stuff. And I'm looking at her. And I look over at the cashier. The cashier looks at me. You know, she's looking at me and I'm shrugging my shoulders and shaking my hands. And after the lady kind of wanders off muttering to herself, the cashier says, "Do you know her?" I said, "I have no idea who she is." But apparently something like that would be enough to get the police acting. Now, what's interesting is that when you get down to the base of this, apparently here, okay. So here's apparently this how this has been working. So the police had decided they were going to believe every woman that came in and they were going to immediately prosecute without doing any background checks. That was going to be their solution to this problem they had up to 2000. That there was going to be this notion of the infallible victim and the assumed guilt of every man. Okay. Well, that's one thing. But there's something really interesting that's going along in this, because there was a fund that was set up, and I'm looking for the name of this fund, Seek Fund, because they were trying to encourage women to come forward, because they, some organization said only 10% of rapes are reported. So they set up this fund to compensate women for coming forward. So the way this ends up is the woman comes forward, she makes an accusation. The police believe her accusation at face value, help her fill out the forms for this fund. The fund says they will validate any woman's complaint whom the police open an investigation for, and it doesn't matter whether the court, whether the case goes to trial or not. And we're talking to the tune of, you know, £20,000. So all a woman has to do is walk in and make an accusation in a police station. They help her fill out the funds. forms, she gets £20,000 because the police have opened an investigation. Uh-huh. And that's what had happened in this case. So she had just gone in. He said of the five she accused, she only knew three of them. She didn't even know me. But she got his name from somewhere. And so she just said, these are the five guys and this is what happened to me and blah, 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 blah. And he said, you know, if you're just going to look at from a public interest or public interest viewpoint, he said, never mind the 78 weeks of life, terrible life that this put us through, all these accusations, all the hatred, all everything, and it eventually gets tossed out. He said, this also cost the taxpayers £500,000, £500,000, to finally do some investigations and realizing this was all completely foundless and factless and was not true. And beyond all of that, he said, the problem is that none of the counties actually talk to each other. So this happened, I think, in Manchester County. And he said, there's absolutely nothing to stop this same woman from going over to the next county, wandering into a police station, making more accusations, filling out forms. So the question in all of this is, I mean, is it any wonder that the number of rape cases that have gotten thrown out in court has gone up as much as it's gone up? The question in all of this is, how far is too far? When is empathy too much? When is we believe all survivors too much? Now, I will tell you that there were individuals who were coming out and commentating on the Ford Kavanaugh thing who will absolutely tell you it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if women are making false accusations. It doesn't matter if they're getting paid money. Great. Good. We're happy. Good. It doesn't matter if men's lives are turned upside down. It doesn't matter. Because women's lives have been turned upside down for years and years and years and years. So men should just feel like what this is like. So, you know, we just need to have this happen because that will hopefully rebalance the universe. I don't think this is going to rebalance the universe. So it's going to be really interesting to see if any of this affects the election. Because what you had in the Ford Kavanaugh thing, someone said, well, it wasn't a court of law, so he's not innocent until proven guilty. Okay, but wait. We have this idea of what testimony should create consequential reverberations. So what should be the witnesses? What should be applied to what this witness has said to where we are ready to enact consequences against that? Is it enough just for someone to stand up and say, I accuse so-and-so of such and such? Because if that's all we have, I've said this before, you're basically back in the Salem witch trials. Because I accuse you, therefore the entire community goes rah against you, and then that's it. I mean, there doesn't have to be any corroboration at all. There doesn't have to be any investigation at all. There doesn't have to be any details at all. It's just I have this memory of this happening. Not to say something didn't happen to Dr. Ford. Absolutely something happened. Maybe even Brent Kavanaugh did it. Who knows? But without any corroboration, without anyone else remembering that it was his, you know, where does this line lie? And as far as I know, except I think there was one Democrat that voted for him, so perhaps that person. As far as I know, none of the Democrats have raised their hand and said, this is too far. It's too far. You can't just have an accusation and it not being corroborated at all by the other four or five people who were supposed to be there. So this is going to be really interesting to see, are there going to be those on the left? I mean, I know it has charged up the people on the right. That's pretty obvious. But are there going to be people on the left that it's going to slow down just enough where they say, and not that those people will go and vote for Republican candidates, but maybe they won't find a reason necessarily to turn out to vote. You know? I don't know. This is going to be fascinating. So we'll see. It may end up being a rout for the Republicans coming up. It may end up being a rout for the Democrats. Donald Trump certainly hasn't pulled back at all. Oh, man. That man, he just doesn't know when to quit. He just keeps doubling down. And you just go, oh, man. Oh, man. It's so fascinating. I have an article that I have to do a review on. That's a really interesting article. It was in the New Republic. And really, really an interesting article about what the author thinks is underneath everything that's going on right now, including the right and the left and the alt-right, alt-left, Donald Trump. That's all. And I got to say that I agree with him because it fits right in with the framework. But this is really fascinating and I have to quit. So anyways, more to come. At some point, I'm going to make it home. I haven't yet. But it's time to quit. I was trying to come up with something clever to say, and I just didn't have anything. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it to the church, and I'm going in to get some supper and then run some sound. Have a great weekend, everyone.